I'm going to talk this morning about one of the many, many issues in which my two rabbeim, Rav Amital, whose philosophy we're learning, and Rav Luchtenstein, Arini Kaparad Mishkavo, who just passed away over a month ago. One of the issues that these two people disagreed on, we all knew about it. And they disagreed on many issues. And yet, as I said, it was extraordinary, and it's been noted, that they were able to run a yeshiva together in total partnership, in total love, and in total respect for one another, even though I can sit here for the next 20 minutes and without batting an eyelash tell you all the issues they disagreed on. And the list is very long. They were dedicated, however, in unity to one thing, or to two things to be precise, to Torah and to Yirat Shamayim. To teaching Torah, to ensuring that Torah would be the center of our lives, and to have the awe and the fear of heaven. Those two things they did not disagree on. And Baruch Hashem, they built a beautiful yeshiva together that I was privileged to learn on. So this morning, allow me to tell you one of the many issues that they didn't disagree, that they didn't agree on. When Rav Luchtenstein would give a sicha about learning, it was always in military terms. He would use the terms, again I heard it in Hebrew, but I'm translating, to conquer the Shas, to conquer the Gemara, to go ahead and to lehistair. How do you say lehistair? When you run up a hill and you charge. To charge and to go forward, and these were the terms he used. When people asked him about how to learn a Masechta, I once asked him how to learn a Masechta of Avodah Zarah. A friend of mine's away, and they were trying to finish the Shas, and I took upon myself to learn Masechta Avodah Zarah, and because he knew everything, he, without batting an eyelash, told me how to learn Masechta Avodah Zarah. This is for a yahrzeit, this is for eventual yahrzeit of someone that passed away. And the way he told me to learn it, basically, was Gemara Rishonim. Later on I learned, he didn't understand Daf Yomi. He didn't understand learning Gemara Rashi and moving on. Or as many people today do, daven up a Daf, as we say. I just learn it, finished, oh, we got the Daf over, let's go. That was not part of his lexicon. It was always to go and to be Mitsuyan in everything you do. How do you say Mitsuyan in English?
Excellent.
Outstanding.
Excellent and outstanding. And these were the sichot, these were the talks he gave, and constantly aspiring to be outstanding. And when people would ask him, you know, it's hard to learn the entire Shas B'Yun, and he'd say, but I did it. In other words, he wouldn't just tell you to do it, he did it. It wasn't just you telling you to learn, he would sit hours and hours in the base medrash for his entire life, and learn, and develop, and learn further, and aspire further. And that's the way he lived his life, and those were the sichot he gave us. Rav Amital, on the other hand, didn't agree with this point. He basically understood the point that you have to tell your kids and students, be excellent, aspire, reach for the stars. And yet, he personally believed that when you tell people to reach for the stars and to get 100 on every test and to get an A on every paper, what can actually happen naturally?
They might give up. Stop.
I don't know if they'd stop right away, but they'd start feeling that they're not achieving enough. Yeah. So what happens when you start feeling that you're not achieving enough?
Yeah, their self-esteem.
Your self-esteem goes down. Your self-confidence goes down. You start feeling, why bother? If I can't get 100, then a 98 is not worth it. An 89 is not worth it. A 70, we only want to talk about. And people start feeling what we call in Hebrew, tiskul. How do you say tiskul? I can't translate that word. Tiskul means sort of a feeling of why bother. You know, life's not worth it. Forget it. I haven't succeeded in this. Even I've succeeded in that. No. I haven't achieved the highest, so why bother? I see a person that knows the entire Shas Baal Peh. And what do I know? I know a few lines here, a few lines there. Why bother? And he felt that that was a very, very bad flaw when educating. That if you only educate to excellence, then the problem will be that because you sometimes cannot be excellent, not everyone has the ability to be excellent, there are only a few unique individuals that are excellent, you'd start feeling that, why bother? Just to finish this point, he felt, and he quoted this and re-quoted this, I heard this from him many, many times, but you can see it on page 112 in the book. When Hannah was asking for a child before God. And I remind you that when Chana was asking for a child before God at the beginning of Shmuel Aleph in the Mishkan in Shiloh, the way she davened is the prototype for the way we daven Shmoneh Esrei to this day. The Gemara in Brachos learns all the laws of the silent Amida from who? From Chana. I'll just say in parentheses, not from a man, not from a rabbi, but from a woman. Close the parentheses and draw your own conclusions. Getting back to this story, when Chana davened, she said a pasuk, Shmuel Aleph, pasuk Yud Aleph, Venatata la amatcha zera anashim, and you shall give to your maidservant, Chana talking before God, and you shall give to your maidservant God zera anashim, a seed of people. What does the word seed of people mean? Anyone? What's a seed of people? She wants a child. What does seed of people, zera anashim, mean?
Firstly, you should be one of the people, a regular guy, not some outstanding prodigy.
I didn't think that would be your first inkling, but if you say so. The Gemara in Maseches Brachos, Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Bet, says different interpretations, and the one Rav Amitav was fond of quoting was what Brewster said, and I'll quote. Zera shemuvla ben anashim, a person who is swallowed amongst the people. He's one of the people. Lo aroch velo gutz, lo katan velo ilem, lo tzachor velo gichor. Namely, not too tall, not too short, not too white, not too black. Not someone that stands out. Someone that's part of the people, and the Gemara concludes, velo chacham velo tipesh. Not stupid, but not overly intellectual. And Rav Amital explained that he personally, though he understands when people are educated for excellence, he personally believed that it's better to actually say, listen, be happy with what you achieve, try your best. So if you get a 70, wonderful. Very famous story, one of his daughters came home, she got a math test, she got a 50. What was Rav Amital's response? Take a wild guess. You got it. You got half of them right, Shkoyach. That was his response. He absolutely believed that if you only educate to excellence, though he understood it, though he acknowledged it, though he knew that in the yeshiva world that's the way things go, he personally went ahead and said, in Hungary we used to also have kavod for balabatim. Now I want you to understand that statement. In the yeshiva world, there is absolutely no tolerance for balabatim. Balabatim are the regular people that work for a living, are good, wonderful Jews, keep all the mitzvot. Balabatim, namely, they have homes. They've left the yeshiva world, they have a wife and family and whatnot. In the yeshiva world, there's no tolerance for being a balabayit. I can tell you right away what this means. I'll give you two examples to make it tangible. Number one, if you're in a class, and the teacher asks a question, the Rebbe asks a shayla, and you answer, and he tells you, that's a balabatish answer. That's like the biggest insult that you can give a student. Right. Balabatish answer. Why do we have to read Kriyat Shema? So if someone says, because God said so, that's a balabatish answer. Rav Amitai was fond of saying, in Hungary we had kavod for balabatim too. Give you another tangible example. Do you know that in many yeshivas today, there is a certain vogue that's called being a ben Torah? Being a ben Torah, a son of Torah, which I love the term, I truly love the term, but the way it's interpreted and practiced, I can't stand. Ben Torah means, hey, there's no one like me, I'm learning Torah. I'm on top of the world. I'm in my ivory tower. So B'nai Torah think that they can't daven with balabatim on Rosh Hashanah because, you know, balabatim daven fast. We have to daven slow. We have kavana. Balabatim don't have kavana. I can daven in a regular minyan. I have to daven in the yeshiva minyan. Those are the two tangible examples of what it means. And Rav Amital couldn't stand that. He couldn't, for the life of him, understand that. And he couldn't stand it in any way. By the way, Rav Lichtenstein couldn't stand that thinking either. That personal thinking. They disagreed. How do you educate? For excellence? Or sort of be happy with the way you are? But on that level of, oh, if you're a balabayit, you're not worth it, they both disagree totally. I just remind you both, everyone, that Rav Amital for his entire life davened in a regular shul and he wasn't a rabbi, and so did Rav Lichtenstein. And quite frankly, like a good boy, I learned this after he died, when he moved to Alon Shvut, and his own student was the Rav of the shul, and everyone got up and stood up when he gave a sicha, when he got up to give a talk, he stood up too. So this student, Rav Rimon, told him, you can't stand up for me. He goes, why? You're the Maradatra. I'm a member of the shul. So then, he got him back. Shmoneh Esrei comes, he tells the Chazan, wait for Rav Lichtenstein. Rav Lichtenstein was not known to daven fast. Rav Lichtenstein finds out, tells the Chazan, don't wait for me. So they make a deal. The Rav makes a deal with Rav Lichtenstein. We don't wait for you, in return for which you don't stand up for me. And he said, okay. But every Shabbos HaGadol and Shabbos Tshuva Drasha, he came, he sat there like everyone else. B'nai Torah, yeshiva bachers don't go to the rabbi's drasha, that's for the balabatim. Rabbi gets up to give a drasha, we go out, we learn Gemara. Right? We don't go to drashas of rabbis. I've seen this many times. You get up to give a shir, the real B'nai Torah, they leave, because hey, this is fake arai, you know, the real stuff we're learning. They both didn't act that way. So the interpretation or the manifestation of this thinking, they both agreed, was terrible. And therefore the way they built the yeshiva in Alon Shvut was very much along those lines. Part and parcel of Alon Shvut, not separated from it in another world where there's no connection. But when it came to education, Rav Lichtenstein was definitely one that said, achieve greatness, achieve excellence. And Rav Amital was sort of saying, Muvla ben Anashim, being part of the people. Just to quote one more beautiful source that he quoted in this particular context, and then I'll hear your questions. The Mesilat Yesharim in chapter 22 says as follows, Chevrat ha'anav, ana'ad me'od, the person that's humble, that has humility, is wonderful. V'ruach ha'briyot nochahe manu be'echrach, and the people that he comes in contact with love to be in contact with him because he's humble. And I think everyone around this table knows the people that are arrogant and are full of themselves, how difficult it is to talk to them. And we all know people like that. But people that are humble and have humility, it's a pleasure to talk to. And it continues. Lo yavol liyadei kas, v'lo yadei meriva, elo hakol b'hashket. He doesn't get upset, he doesn't get angry, he doesn't get into fights, everything's quiet. Hakol b'menucha. Do I need to translate what menucha means? Restful, peaceful. Ashrei misha zocheh l'mida zo. Blessed is the person that actually is privileged to this. The Kfar Amru, when he quotes the Yerushalmi in Shabbos, Masha asta chokhma tara l'rosha, asta anava ekev l'suliyata. I love that Yerushalmi. What knowledge has done to put a crown on your head, humility has done to the soles of your foot. Maybe I'm not translating correctly. What do we call this part of the foot?
The heel.
The heel. The heel of the foot. In other words, the Yerushalmi is saying you can be the greatest scholar, you can give wonderful lectures, people look at you and say, wow! But the heel of your foot better be full of humility. The heel of your foot better be full of humility. Rav Amital once met the Rosh Yeshiva of Chorev, I forgot his name, a day or two after he got married during Sheva Brachos. So I can't begin to tell you the simcha in a shul on a Thursday when a chassan comes in, and when you get to the long tachanun, there's a clap on the bima, no tachanun. Everyone asks, what happened? There's a chassan. Ah! All of a sudden, everyone is part of the wedding. Everyone's so happy that this fine gentleman got married. We got to omit tachanun, the full extra, how many minutes?
Three, four to five minutes
of davening. Ah! Amechat, you come home smiling, your wife doesn't know who you are. Usually on Monday and Thursday you're angry, you're mad, you're tense, all of a sudden you're calm. We skip tachanun. So such happened in Givat Mordechai, where Rav Amital lived, and the then young boy, but later the Rosh Yeshiva of Chorev comes in, and he's a chassan, they skip tachanun, and after davening, Rav Amital goes up to him and says, you know why you got married? Because you're going to be a great Talmud Chacham, and people are going to call you Hagaon, Hagadol, Harav, and this and that. Then when you get home, your wife will set you straight. And she'll tell you, throw out the garbage. Take the kids to the chug. Wash the floor. That's this Yerushalmi. Masha astach chokhma tara l'rosha. Just like you can wear the crown of your head, all your achievements, all your knowledge, your degrees, everything you achieved in university and in life, you have to have humility on the heel of your foot. It ends the Mesirat Yisrael, Ki kol ha-chokhma kula lo yarechena, because all your knowledge won't be appreciated. And that's exactly what Rav Amital was very worried about. That if you achieve a little bit, but you didn't achieve everything. You learned a good Masechta, but you didn't learn all the Masechtas. You learned one daf, but you didn't learn all the daf in that day. You had a good day in learning, but you have bad days as well. That all of a sudden you'll say, what is it worth it? Forget it. Let's just forget about the whole thing. I'll never be the best, so forget it. As I said many times, perfection is only a word in the dictionary. It doesn't exist in reality. And therefore, he personally felt that this was the way to go. I said, Rav Lichtenstein did not agree that this is the way to educate. And I can understand his point of view as well, that if you indeed aspire to the stars, at least you don't stay in the mud. And both have validity. I believe I was very, very privileged personally because I saw this difference of opinion under the same roof. How many times in the Torah world do we see such a difference of opinion living under the same roof in mutual respect? And Baruch Hashem, we students felt that we were in between these two points of view. At the front of the Beis Medrash there was two pillars. On one side said Rav Amital, on the other side said Rav Lichtenstein, Areni Kaparat Mishkavo. And indeed, I always felt that we students are very, very privileged because we're in between the two. Rav Lichtenstein tells you, aspire, aspire, aspire. And Rav Amital says, but don't lose your self-confidence on the way. Rav Lichtenstein says, excellence. And Rav Amital says, and even if you're not excellent, it's fine. And that balance was so important to every yeshiva student that was exposed to these two people. Just the end, there's a part of Zichronot that both Rav Amital and Rav Lichtenstein liked in two different contexts. Rav Amital was the chazan on Yom HaNoraim, and he used to sing this part of davening. And this was the only part of davening that I recall that he repeated words. You know, there's a big shiloh, can you repeat words when you're a chazan? And he personally did not repeat any words except for here. Ashrei ish shelo yishkachecha, blessed is the person that doesn't forget you, namely you, God. Uven adam yitametz bach, and a human being, that's, what's li tametz?
Exerts
energy for you. Invests energy in you. As I said many times, and it's interesting, Rav Amital used to madgish, Ashrei ish shelo yishkachecha, and then he would sing, Uven Adam yitametz bach. He would emphasize the word Ben Adam, human being. Namely, you're just a human being. You're just not a malach. You're a human being. Rav Lichtenstein would sing this song, and it became associated with him on Simchas Torah. He always got the third akafah. At night, this was the song he sang. I was there many years. It didn't change, unless it changed after my time. 8 years I was in yeshiva, it didn't change. If he had to go ahead and repeat words, I think it would be the words, Yitametz Bach. Constantly achieving, constantly investing energy in order to go ahead and to get better and to get more excellent. So same pasuk, two Rishay Yeshiva, and I think anyone that sees them both is balanced. Ven Adam on the one hand, but Yitametz Bach on the other. Human being on the one hand, and yet constantly trying to achieve on the other. And that balance, I think, is important. Yes?
You know, in my home, my mom was a teacher, and if I'd come home with a 95, she'd say, where's the other 5 points? Now, it never annoyed me. I mean, that could do a lot of damage to it, but thank God I did well in school. So when she said it, you're right. And I would, my dad and then said, just do as well as you can. So within likely in yeshiva, somehow I knew that when my dad said that, it's true, but I understood my mother also, and therefore I aspired more because it seemed like a fallback position. So it's curious that when you have these two dichotomies, where do people really try to shoot for it? In my case, it was really my mother's, because she wouldn't have been happy if I would have fallen back on my father's shita, so to speak. Plus, being from New York City also, there was a time I lived in Laurelton in Forest Hills. The schools there are homogeneously tracked. So I was in the IGC class. We know what that stands for. When we moved to New Rochelle, suddenly it was a heterogeneous class. The kids could barely read.
Yep.
So pedagogically, there's no doubt that in the IGC class you can really shoot because all the kids are very motivated. And once you have that mix, it was like a free ride. So morning education, the yeshiva had a special class just for guys like a sabura who could zip. Or if they didn't like that idea, because maybe other people would look at that.
It's hard for me to answer. There's different shiurim. There is a kola called kola gavoh, but it's not called that. It's all that learns only Gemara, Be'iyun, and usually mesechtas that are not learned, like Taharot and things like that. And there were different shiurim for different people. And there was a very wide variety of classes that were given. And I believe that people definitely were able to pick what they liked to learn. Having said that, there were certain standards that were part and parcel of that yeshiva, that indeed, if you didn't feel that you were at the level, you eventually felt lost. But I think that even then, because you had these two people, like you said, one person says 95, where's the other five? And the other person said, well, you did your best. You came out balanced. You constantly aspire, and yet at the same time you can say, Ani sameach b'chalki, I'm happy with what I achieved.
From someone
and I think that that's very important in life.
It's known as an Ivy League yeshiva.
I don't want to really be a very good learner. I like to say Lashon Hara when I'm within people that understand, but I'll just say that as much as an Ivy League college and an Ivy League yeshiva and an Ivy League university, even in these kinds of places, there are people that are, with due respect, not that smart, and there are people that don't learn, and there are people that stay in their room all day and sleep, and there are people that slack off, and there's people that exert energy, and there are people that are in the base measures past 11, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, and that's the way it is in a big institution. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest. I think, though, that if you were serious, then you saw these two examples in front of you constantly. The balance between achieving and excellence, but being happy with what you achieved until now. And that dichotomy, that dialectic is so important, because you become balanced. Yeah.
We're told that we have to teach the child according to his way.
Yeah.
So a good educator should really do neither, but rather should try to understand, you know, what is this child? What is his potential? What are his strengths? What are his weaknesses? And instead of saying, you've got to achieve, or it doesn't matter, do your best, whatever you can do, you have to really understand this. For instance, I'll give an example. I went to a high school that had, public high school, that had tracks. And first of all, you had to get into the high school. Even though it was a public high school, this was before, back in the 50s, before civil rights and all of that. And there were no blacks in that high school. Incidentally, most of the Jews in the city were able to get in. You had to have a certain IQ. And once you got in, they tested you to see if you go into the science math track or the language social studies history track. In other words, what are your strengths? And, okay, so I got into the language social studies track and took languages, Latin, Greek, French, German, so on. And, you know, that was no big deal. Whereas the kids who were in the science math, well, they had to take 2 years of French and 2 years of German simply because at that time the colleges required for your PhD that you pass French and German language exams. And I had to, too, for my PhD, even though I didn't need either for my paper. But I had a sense and that these Goyim in Omaha, Nebraska, at this public high school, were aware that even though, you know, the kids who went to that school had a certain IQ, and I'm not going to tell you what it was, and could pass certain exams, which meant the vast majority of kids in Omaha could not go to that high school, they still had tracks, and they still had counselors who helped you along and said, you know, maybe... maybe you're this or maybe you're that, and that they tried very hard, this was in the 50s, to look at the individual as an individual, and they didn't push, you know, to excel because they had people there in that high school who were able to excel if they were motivated.
I'm just going to answer as follows. There's a difference between having tracks and educating the individual. Absolutely, I agree there should be different high schools, and Baruch Hashem in Israel we're zochet to have various high schools for various achievements. A music high school, a basketball high school, all yeshivas.
Basketball high school.
There's many different high schools, English-speaking, Hebrew-speaking, Baruch Hashem. But in every high school you're in, depending on whatever level it is, it could be the lower level, what we call the lower level or the higher level, the question is, do you say to a student, let's be excellent in what you do. Excellent is that you're in a certain level of math, let's say, and it's a very low level of math, but be excellent in the low level. Or do you say to the student, just do your best? In my opinion, you have to say, do your best, but aspire. Do your best, but aspire for the excellence. And that way you don't stay in the mud on the one hand, but on the other hand, you don't have the lose of self-confidence when you don't get the 100. So even if you're in a high school with students where their scores on tests and exams are not that high, if indeed you internalize this message, then it makes no difference who the student is. It makes no difference what level. At their level, where they can learn only a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, they can't even open up a Gemara. Do you tell them, so be great in learning Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, know it Baal Peh, know every single Simon, have a photographic memory? Or do you tell them, oh, learn, see what you remember, move on. I think it has to be somewhere in the middle. Aspire, yes, but be happy with what you achieved.
I believe
that's very important in education. I've seen in the last few years a beautiful thing, I've also done it, that for bat mitzvahs, people, parents try to do a siyum with their children, try to finish a tractate of Talmud, try to finish a Sefer in Tanakh, whatever it is. My problem begins when the bar mitzvah's looming and you didn't finish. Do you push and push, we have to finish? So we didn't finish. So there'll still be a bar mitzvah, and we don't have a siyum, we'll continue learning. And I believe the answer is somewhere in the middle. And that balance is very important. And I believe that the balance here is indeed one that we have to remember. So yes, Rav Amital and Rav Luchenstein disagreed on this point, but Baruch Hashem, they were under the same roof, because I think that people like me got a sense of balance.